Podcasting is a complicated profession, which is why we're here to discuss the final triptych of Andor Season 2, which is also the final season of Andor. My name is Dan Moore, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Tony Sindelar, is here. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Dan. Hi, person to be named in a moment.
Kat Benish is also here. Hi, Kat.
Hello. I have nothing witty to say, because it has been a long week.
And in Andor and in real life.
Yeah. No, this was... Yeah. I will perk up, though. I will have energy.
How many years before Battle of Yavin is it for you, Kat?
The Battle of Yavin is every day here.
Every time they just showed those ziggurats, I teared up a little bit and got very excited. Because like this, I was telling Dan.
She loves ziggurats.
I do love ziggurats. Who does not love a good ziggurat?
I love a good ziggurat.
I mean, they're just like, they're the cool pyramids.
I've been trying to quit ziggurats, but.
I have a, we try not to talk about Dungeons & Dragons, but I have a very formative D&D adventure moment where I made them fight. I made a group that included Dan fight basically an infinite number of ziggurats. An infinite number of zombies.
It was very tricky.
They were on a ziggurat, but there was an infinite number of zombies they had to fight until they could solve a puzzle. I went into a toy store and bought a physical puzzle intended for children and gave it to one player. And I used the DM screen to put the screen around the player so that the other players could not see the puzzle.
Oh, that's fantastic.
The player was solving. It was intended to take about about 12 minutes. 30 minutes into the adventure, I had to rework things.
Well, this is actually my one of my favorite Dragon Friends series is when they go to we'll get to you, Dan, is when they do the Tomb of Annihilation. And I have no idea if they put in the additional puzzles, but they have to solve actually some fairly hard puzzles. And I have no idea if they're actually in Tomb Annihilation. It's a blast.
I would assume they're written in, mainly because creating puzzles and adventures is kind of hard. And why make extra work? Dan, do you have a favorite ziggurat?
Total Party Killer.
Let me go back to my ziggurat story. I hadn't quite finished that. There was more there. That every time we cut to Yavin 4, it was just like, this to me was what put everything else aside, all the prequels, all that.
It's ziggurats.
Yeah, but no, it's A New Hope. It's Yavin 4. It's seeing the ziggurats. And it's just like, I was saying, it's like, it's the OG rebellion. So good to come back.
Where's the one guy in the tower with the speed gun?
I know. I wanted him. When they were flying out on the Y-Wing at the very end, I wanted it to just fade to that guy.
There they go again. No one ever listens to the speed trap cop on Yavin.
Or apparently the general.
Yeah.
Or the general. All right. Yeah.
We're going to start with episode 10.
What is the show about?
Oh, you don't want to jump to 11 and work backward and then forward again?
Oh, I would start at 10. Which one was 10 again? Was that the first one of the triptych?
Yes.
No. We're starting at 9.
No. 10, 11, 12. There's 12 episodes. 10, 11, 12.
You're right. We're on 10, 11, 12.
Correct, because I run this show.
It could be a good episode.
You don't run the... It is a democracy.
I keep the show on the rails.
Democracy.
I think of it more of as a light oligarchy.
Episode 10, entitled Make It Stop. Thank you. Which we kick off, as we said, 1 year before Yavin. Would someone like to run this down?
This is an episode, I believe, without Andor in it at all. I believe this episode also basically takes place exclusively on Coruscant. So it's all about all of our basically various campaigns, as it were, reaching their culmination. There's a lot of secret meetings in this. The first one would be that Lonnie has basically arranged. Yeah, Lonnie.
I was shocked that he was killed. Shocked.
10 episodes. Good run for Lonnie.
Lonnie, love that they gave Lonnie. Lonnie was the one who got the Death Star, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't see that coming. That he, Lonnie was the one that was going to center the one that we have to thank for A New Hope.
So Lonnie and Luthen have a park meeting. I don't know. There's a bench.
It's under a bridge.
Under a bridge.
Very good spycraft.
And things are not good. Lonnie is like, it is time to go. I have done stuff that I can't undo. But also I found the stuff that I wasn't supposed to find. I have, and specifically, that there's a weapon. There's a specific series of words that they start basically repeating, which is the name of the last episode.
Jedha,
Kyber, Erso, sometimes with more. I think it slowly loses. It gets shorter, I think, over the games of telephone. But he basically wants out. Luthen is not doing great, and we don't see the end of the meeting. Luthen goes to meet with Clea and is like, well, we gotta go.
Also, I think really crucial there to interrupt is that we realized that in this, because I'm in this part of like episode, the next episodes are Lana got this information by basically stealing and sitting on for a year Dedra's, not her chain code, but
essentially your password.
Her password.
Probably, I imagine her USB those code cylinders, like cylinders that are in their pockets.
Do we see that at some point? I'm always amazed.
I don't think so.
With like the details they plant. Well, we'll get to that because there's a question about it.
You know, there is the thing, I think, where we jump forward a year at a time. Someone we were talking to recently didn't like that is the organization of the season. I was like, okay,
that's fine.
Interesting.
People are allowed to have different opinions. They're wrong, but that's fine.
Okay. And, you know, so, yeah, I'm willing to believe that that happened, you know, 11 months ago. And so Lonnie's been sitting on it for a while. I think what's tricky here is he doesn't actually have, like, a file to give Luthen. He just has, like, I am telling you, this thing is bad. We don't see the end of the meeting. Luthen goes and meets with Clea. There's basically kind of, like, a debate about who's going to go do what. And, you know, it is decided that Clea just has to bug out and Luthen is going to go back to the shop and burn everything down, which is, you know, both, I think, figuratively and literally in terms of destroy all evidence that they were ever there. I forget when, but at some point we get a cut back to Lonnie sitting on the park bench under the bridge, not looking so
alive.
Looking very dead, looking very with a blaster in his.
I mean, I did not have high hopes for Lonnie. Like, part of it, as I said to Kat, was like, if he disappears, then the ISB immediately knows who the mole was. So everything potentially gets changed. If by finding him dead, it kind of closes the loop, even though it's bad. Buys him time, at least.
Had they not been so close to... had they not been so close to finding Luthen, I think it actually was horribly the right thing to do, because then he would have spent a dead guy on a bench and they wouldn't have, Luthen would have been, like, the reason it failed and the reason they were able to trace it back to Lonnie is because they were so close to Luthen and then realized that at some point, I forget, we'll talk about the next episode, they start realizing the Death Star information has been leaked.
It, you know, it's sad because Lonnie is kind of doing the right thing and is kind of a hero.
I also love that he sat on it for a year because he's like, I didn't want you to push me for information to use this, but I wanted it like wait.
And, you know, I mean, I guess maybe he has broken the rules by reaching too far or, you know, has gone beyond Luthen's direct instructions, but it still feels I mean, I guess in my, you know, I didn't think Lonnie was going to make it all the way to the end, but I wanted him to.
I wanted him to.
But it felt like if he was going to die, he was going to get, like, caught by the ISB or, you know, or some other mishap. To be shot by Luthen underneath a bridge is the spy's way out, but it's sad, right?
There's also an element to it that I think is interesting, which is as Luthen, as we've seen over the course of this season, is not the person he was.
Yes, and that is a clear... theme.
And the fact that, like, this coupled with what we're about to discuss is very much Luthen being like, everything looks like a nail, right? There's only one way to solve any of these problems, and it is with violence, whether inflicted upon others or inflicted upon himself.
Yeah. Luthen's in the shop. He melts kind of the
it's
comp
like
system,
Mercury
I guess.
Of something.
It was cool. It was a cool effect. I liked it.
Cool. I mean, okay. Yeah. And then, like, there's the very kind of dramatic doorbell ring, basically, from the front of the shop. And, oh no, it's Dedra. And it's like, you know, why is she here? What is going on? And if, you know, she at first asks some kind of innocent questions about
That back and forth, the conversation within the conversation was so good. They're like, I know, and I know that you know that I know, and I know that you know that I know that you know. It was wonderful.
And she clunks the dead Star Drive unit that Luthen had 4 years ago now.
But with
Chekhov's
knife, too, though. It was excellent.
Yeah. And, you know, basically she has done this all. It's not quite a raid. It's the prelude to a raid because she wants to give her villain speech, and that's what gets you. Because Luthen attempts suicide with a ceremonial knife, and then the rest of the ISB comes in and is you know, Kozenstoff. They take Luthen away. Kleya's in the crowd, and she sees that Luthen's going to the hospital, not to a jail.
And it was so telling to me. And I think in some ways, I lose a lot of respect for Dedra in this episode and the next episode.
Mm-hmm. You had respect for her.
I think what is so interesting about Dedra is Dedra has this incredible mix of passion, single-mindedness, and skill. Mm-hmm. And these two episodes, I think, really show that she's over, like, her desire for glory, she becomes like, whatever her drive, whether it's obsession or something, she loses the skill. Yeah. Right, she does this by herself. She doesn't call in other people. And then in the next one,
she's investigating Luthen when she's not supposed to be. It's not her desk.
Right. Pride.
And it's pride. And then then the next one, when she's basically like pulling reports that she shouldn't be in, like not reporting things when she gets things of like, and it's like, oh, I had to do it. Like, it was justifying the ends, and then it just, that's her ignominious end at the end. But like, I thought she was going to be a better spy, and we see her fall apart essentially in this. A
lot of parallels for Cyril, right?
Well, that's just it. With Cyril there as kind of a, not exactly a grounding influence, but he is a counterweight to her in some ways, right? Like we talked a little bit in his death about how the difference between him and Dedra was that he believed in the system, quote unquote, whereas she believed in like the empire.
He believes in law and order, right. And she maybe believes in power.
Or she's just been brainwashed by the empire. Yeah. And I think some of this is to show without Cyril there as like a counterweight, she is just all in on that. And like, it belies the point that in the previously thing, they have the clip where she tells Hirt, her former assistant, like, I don't want the glory. I'll give you all the glory. Clearly not true, right? Like, she is clearly, I think at that point, either deceiving him and or deceiving herself, but yet deceiving him. And I think that's kind of what it comes down to, is she, after losing Cyril and after Gorman falling apart, it feels like maybe she was clutching at straws for like, okay, I got to fall back on Axis. That was the thing that I could do.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I could see that she becomes obsessed about Axis and the death of Cyril's death.
I kind of wish we had gotten to spend a little bit more time with her and like seeing like, what is her home life like right now, or like what's going on with her? Cause she kind of hits the bottom real fast here. It's specifically, we basically move from this to this kind of giant set piece section, where there's this hospital. The one with the whales, or the one where they break Chekhov out of the hospital?
Chekhov out of the hospital. That, I believe, again, is the centerpiece.
I
just like the design of this hospital. I wondered if it was like a real building or something. It's set up in this neat.
Some of it, some of it is.
It's set up in this neat U shape where you can kind of see with tons of glass, and you can see him. Having spent a bunch of time in various Boston hospitals, it felt very modern, bureaucratic,
but also,
you know,
like rabbit-worn. If like Freddie was bent about Auburn, like it's a beautiful hospital, and you're like, there's all these weird. Always look a little different depending on who paid for it.
Yeah, right. It's built piecemeal. Yeah. But basically, Kleya is going to use all of her spycraft to get in. She steals a nurse's clothes and a badge, she's coming up through back hallways. She's got like some senior citizen in a hover wheelchair for a bit that she's using as part of her cover. And she shoots some people, and then she shoots a lot of people as she makes her way to the room where they've got Luthen. It seems like basically on like a
ventilator type thing. Space
lungs.
Again, can we talk about the long running theme we have on the show on medical technology in Star Wars, and does it exist? Mm. It is amazing to me once again that they were able to keep Luthen alive,
who stabbed himself with a giant ceremonial knife.
But Padme died in childbirth.
He didn't break his heart with the knife. That's the key. He still had the will to live.
Yeah.
I tell you, it says this was a set, but it also said it was filmed near the modern London Wall Street, just adjacent to the medieval London Wall that once surrounded the city.
Oh, so, very cool.
We get what I didn't expect, which is flashbacks to Luthen and Clea, I don't know, what, 15, a decade ago?
Yeah, we tried to place it. Yeah.
Yeah, and at first I was a little confused. You know, it's really interesting in these episodes. The stormtroopers are used very sparingly. You're going to see a lot of Imperial police / military forces who are not in stormtrooper garb. I guess I wasn't actually sure the exact details of what we were seeing, other than Luthen was some kind of military officer for the Empire, was in some planet where it seemed like they were basically carrying out a massacre.
Yes.
And there was lots of shoot anything that moves, you know, clear this building, blow up everything. And he is not happy with it.
Yeah.
And he discovers a stowaway. And then we kind of cut forward to them just kind of walking through life on the run.
And Clea, you know, was a young girl. I loved how much of a already stone cold.
Yeah. They really nailed
the
adult version of him. Yeah. I mean,
young version
being a child. Yeah, sorry, you know what I mean. Yeah, being a child actor seems not easy, and like that kid kind of
she was good.
It.
Yeah, she was really good. Yeah.
I was watching some of the behind the scenes stuff and interviews with some of them, and some of the fascinating stuff that they talked about in those. And again, some of this is like actors, you know, internalizing their backstories a little bit, sometimes interpolating things, but talking about the fact that she was always the one running. Luthen.
That was
right.
I think
she's the one with to that speech that he gives her later on about like bank your anger and things like that. Yeah. Like she's kind of the fuel of the rebellion in that way, and she is shaping him through her own desire and possibly also through his own guilt over it. Right?
Interesting. I can see that, and I think also it's great to hear him mimic some of the words when he tells her just move, and then when they're leaving just before they're about to burn the shop, he says they move again.
She murders several Imperial armored cops to get to the hospital, and it's, you know, I mean, I love in the next episode they're like, it must have been a team of
three at least. Well, so there's
nothing else could explain it.
There's basically three things I wanted to really say about this episode. One is, this is my favorite episode of this entire season. I think this is the best one. Two, from a visual standpoint, so interesting, this is the only one I think we've really seen with flashbacks, and also visually, they used a lot of shots with reflections in this episode that I thought was really well done. And so visually, I think stood out. And then three, in my mind, this was a wonderful counter to No Way Out or One Way Out. Mm-hmm. One Way Out is a whole bunch of guys trying to break out of a prison. This is one woman trying to break into a hospital.
Yeah.
And that was also a show episode where they stuck in one place with one group of people the entire episode. And I think these two go really well in hand together. I'm going to guess that was intentional, but I very much liked their dedicated, to me, it felt very, very parallel, and it had a lot of the great same tensions.
It's an echo, and I think they have done that a lot in this season, is trying to sort of tip hats to stuff that came in last season.
I like that we just got to see kind of more normal places on Coruscant, and we're going to, in an episode we're about to talk about, we spent a bunch of time in an apartment block, just because I feel like usually, so far, Coruscant and Star Wars is either like fancy luxury apartments or subterraneans, you know, slums where with a bounty hunter on every corner. And it's like, no, there's normal stuff too. You know,
one of the things, we've hit this drum plenty over the season, but worth remembering here, Elizabeth Dalou, who plays Clea. I was thinking back to season one and our coverage of it. And I think one of the things was like, I'm pretty sure we all struggled, especially maybe Kat, because I know you struggle with names sometimes, to remember who that character, like what her name was in season one, because she seemed like such a side character.
Forget her now.
They leaned so hard into
it.
She does so good. And that final scene where she has to turn off the ventilator is amazing.
Yeah.
And it's a fantastic piece of work.
And even just, you know, the choice to turn off the ventilator versus like, I was like, are they going to show us like her shooting him in the head? And it's like, let's flash back to her childhood. Probably not.
And I remember seeing, I think one of you guys shared an article about an interview with Tony Gilroy, and he talks about Clea and the fact that she's run a trade, and this was her first big show. Mm-hmm. And they say there was a line there that was a throwaway line of like, and we're so proud of like where she ends up. And I was like, Well, that's an interesting line. Like, I wonder if she has really, like, if she continues to grow and play a large part in the end of this. And, like, oh my God. And jumping ahead to, the last episode, I was, we'll talk more about this. Very happy to kill Clea. I was going to be very upset they killed Clea. But I also love just continuing to see her grieve through Luthen and then having that reconnection with Val. Mm-hmm. That's great. That character is so good.
It's pretty, I mean, I think one of the interesting insights I took away from listening to her talk in one of the interviews was her point that she's like, she's not his daughter, right? Mm-hmm. Even like, and the thing she implies there, which I don't think is said outwardly, is essentially she, whether or not he'd pulled the trigger, like he killed her parents essentially by being part of that, right? And she's never going to forgive him for that. But also something about love grows up between, around these people when you are in close proximity or whatever. So they have a father-ish, daughter-ish relationship, but it's not, it's complicated, family. Right? It's very nuanced. It's not strict. Like, and so that scene where she kills him and then kisses him on the head, as tears are running down her face. Like there's so much going on in that moment. Mm. There's so many levels to what she's playing there that it is, it's just a truly astounding piece of work. And I think maybe one of the best shots in the entire show.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That episode was just so good.
Yeah.
Like, really, just...
I like that. I love that bit on Naboo where they blow up the tanks and he's training her to, like, don't look. Now we leave.
Brutal. And giving a chance to hang on to her childhood. It's a choice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Mm.
Really, really good episode.
Yeah. It is excellent work. All right. Episode 11, Who Else Knows?
This one to me is too scattered memory. I'll take the last one.
I'm going to be using notes from Wikipedia anyways because I don't remember. So this is mainly Krennic has been summoned in a great entrance bit where Dedra is being held in her little cell. Yes. Ben Mendelsohn. God, I love Ben Mendelsohn.
Every time he shows up on the screen, I give like a little squeal because he's just so,
I saw an interview with Denise Goff where she's talking about how he comes in and she's like, you see the cape. And you kind of get a little like, even in the moment, you're like, oh, okay. And then she's like, he does this weird thing where he like puts his finger on my head. And I'm like, all right, just go with it. You know? I commented to some friends of ours who follow the superhero vein that it makes me so angry that they totally squandered him in. I mean, they squandered all of Secret Invasion, but Ben Mendelsohn was in that.
He was
so
in Secret
good.
Invasion. Who was he in Secret Invasion?
He's the chief. He's the chief Skrull. He's in Captain Marvel too. He's the head of the.
Well,
Skrulls.
He's under prosthetics.
Right. Yeah,
most of the time,
a lot of it. But he's so good.
He's in Captain Marvel?
Already a surface level squandering of Ben.
Yes.
It's just.
He's an excellent actor. So he does a great job here. And he's, basically giving Dedra a lot of crap about like, okay, you like your codes were used to access the information about the Death Star. The only reason I'm here is the Death Star. It's the only thing I care about.
Say it.
Yeah.
And I think that might be the first time we hear Death Star in all of Andor.
It would at least be the first chronologically also.
Yeah.
Right.
And a brilliant bit where he says to her something like, if you're not a rebel spy, you missed your calling. Wow.
I was reminded of some board games with traitors and basically like, if you are not the traitor, you are awful at this game. Accusations.
Also, Dan had a question. Ooh. Death Star, one word or two?
He does say the word.
He say the word.
Is it camel case?
It's not. It's two words. So, Dan... please consult the Imperial Brand Identity Binder that
you've
got.
Guide here.
Yeah, what is Wikipedia? Yeah. It's I think it's right below astrogation.
She's botched all of this. Hirt, her former protege, is
that guy
is put in charge of tracking down.
Also, clearly not good when he has to ask, "How do I do this?"
Right, tracking down Clea. Yeah, he has to go to her for advice at one point because. They don't know where to find her. They come up with a cockamamie story about a plague or whatever and put out her picture everywhere. This is one where Partagaz and Krennic get to have like a tete-a-tete briefly, which is a great Anton Lesser and Ben
Mendelsohn. And they're talking about Palpatine and Tarkin, and there's a lot of office politics in this episode.
Right? I loved it. Like, so good.
You know, Krennic is like, "Why am I even here?" And Partagast is like, "Well, one of my people's in jail, one of my people's dead, and I have this other guy here. So guess what, other guy? This is your opportunity."
Is it also this episode where he basically says, like, to Krennic, like, "You should have been done by Death with the Death Star by yes. now."
And Krennic. Lovely. Krennic is that guy in your team project at school where he's like, "Oh yeah, almost done, days away," and it's like the dish is not even yet in, yeah. dude. You know. Well,
I also loved, and again, I'm sure Dan will talk about the gun at some point, but the and again, setting up later in the next episode when they can't get a faster recall time is well because everyone's responding to the plague, right?
Yeah, yeah. Send everybody so out good. To the
Whoops.
Thing.
You overcompensated.
Yeah. You scrambled everybody.
You too far to the left and went right. Yeah. Clea makes it to the safe house and she uses breaks open a wall and gets a radio.
Yeah, John Wick style. Pulls you guys, the radio out of.
Keep all your good stuff in walls.
Or floors. It's it's really secure.
Yep. Sends her distress signal off to anybody listening, which I guess is to Yavin, where Willman mm-hmm. has a radio under his bed that he's like, "I keep it charged."
Willman.
But he's not allowed to have it. But it shows that he's like a true believer. Like he's the one person who keeps but Dan's all pointed out, like, we never see Luthen and a woman together.
He and Luthen, I don't think, are in a single scene together.
No.
In it's the amazing. Entire show.
But there is certainly the implication that he's not just like working for him, but like all the way
hard in,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
and in a maybe hasn't had any contact. And I think there's a suggestion here that maybe everyone on Yavin has not had any contact with Luthen. So in, I think they say a year.
Well,
right?
Cassian says for sure, Cassian. And most of them don't. It feels like even don't before that, him. Right? Like, and that's actually one of the fascinating things, and actually a subtle bit that I really like here. Willman. We never see him with Luthen, right? And, you know, the closest we get is Saw telling him at some point, like, "Oh, you're not here. You're not with Luthen. You're here with me."
You're right here.
Sorry.
That's pretty good.
Thank you. I'm working on my Saw Gerrera.
The Saw Gerrera voice changes over time.
Yeah.
Right? So it's, you got it, like, where,
so
where am I?
Right? What level of Saw am
how
I?
Much, how much space gas have you helped?
Yeah. How much Rylo have I helped? And I think, to the point about that meeting later on where Cassian talks about, like, I know him, if not better than anybody, like, you know, I saw the good and the bad. Willman feels like he is in some ways, because we see him separated from Luthen, they're never in close proximity, he has almost taken on a hero worship of Luthen, and he doesn't see the bad in him, right?
Yeah.
He is there just purely to see the, like, to almost idolize him in a way that Cassian does not,
because
Cassian has been through the ringer.
He's seen the darkness in Luthen.
Yeah. And both Val and Cassian walk away, and I think they're very consistent in their relationship.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you notice, Willman is walking around with a pretty limp. Significant limp.
Yeah,
right?
From that shot.
So he got shot a year ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? And so not doing great.
No. But he did get Marty McFly's puffer jacket.
They just make a lot of sense in the climate of Yavin.
There's a lot of orange being worn on Yavin.
It's for safety.
It's safety, so you don't get run over by an X-Wing that's parking, I think. They're high-vis. They're high-vis puffer jackets.
We generally, I think, have switched to yellow, but it's fine.
It's a long time ago.
Willman recruits Cassian and Melshi and K2, who are... I saw Tony Gilroy refer to him multiple times as, like, basically drinking in a frat house.
Yeah. playing space dominoes or something.
Playing space dominoes in the frat house. And Cassian at first thinks, you know, is it a trap, or like, is what's going on here? Is this radio, is this real? And then eventually convinced that it's real and basically is like, "Oh, I'm going off on my own because nobody can be my boss, even though I'm technically have a rank and I'm technically in the military. But nope, I'm going to take my ship and my buddies and we're going to go rescue Luthen."
Because I wasn't sure, because it's been a year. So 1 year ago. He was coming and going from the base, and the general was like, "You can't keep doing this."
Yeah.
Does he have, like, a badge with insignia and stuff on it now?
He does at one point.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. And we get the implication later that
he's
being sent on special missions and stuff. Yeah. I feel like there's the distinctive scene, and I'm probably jumping way ahead, where, like, he's in his, I guess it's when he's heading out later, and he's, like, in his kind of spy outfit, but he's walking past all the troops that are, like, marching in formation.
Yeah. So he's not, like, an infantry. But he also didn't make general like virtually everyone else.
Yeah. Virtually
everyone
else. Well,
you got to fill up the lower ranks.
Cap, my generous headcanoning is that basically if you had any military rank, you get to be general, right? So you were all the generals are defectors from the imperial
military, yeah.
Right? So they got a military. So just like for parity, they have to get in at everybody else. No,
this feels like a real like what they call like an I formation in in. There's like a lot of
Yeah, so Clea is at the safe house. We get that like kind of timing thing, which is Cassian and Melshi go in right before the Imperials show up, jam all the comp frequencies, of course, so K2, who's in the shuttle, can't talk to them. And we get our, like, essentially our setup for, like, the mini version of The Raid.
Yeah, kind of.
But there's
there's some horror movie elements in here.
Yep,
there are also some nice parallels. When it's probably the next episode, when, what's his name, Hweet?
Hirt.
When Hirt, he actually looked in several times to remind me of Cyril Karn in the first few, from the very first episode. Sorry, I'm moving the mic around. Sorry. From Cyril Karn in Andor season one, of getting like very excited, I'm going to do this, like putting on his armor and pretending to be like, I'm one of the guys.
The raid, he goes on to barracks with those guys. Yeah. And he's like they give him armor that he's probably never worn before. And
exactly.
He, you know. And it was interesting because these are not stormtroopers,
no,
but they are like 40% stormtroopers, right?
They wear stormtrooper-ish armor, but no helmets. Yeah.
Yeah. And so maybe because they're like, I don't know if they're ISB, military police or something. They real, you know, it feels like Tony Gilroy is making very specific choices about when he deploys stormtroopers or not. Because I think it's probably important we get to see their faces a lot.
Yeah.
There's one guy that's like leading the group who is quite physically larger.
He seems like a sergeant type person.
He's got than everybody rough else voice there. And a mustache. Yeah.
And it looks like all the other sergeants.
Yep.
And Tony Gilroy really wanted to put hats on all the, put Star Trek.
Oh, the hats were cute. I like the hats.
Thankfully, K2, not great at following orders.
K2, he learned from the best. So K2, there's a great sort of cut back and forth where Partagaz is in the ops center running this and somebody's talking to them from the shuttle. K2 walks on and is basically like chucking people left and right. They lose contact with the shuttle and are very confused about why that's happening. And then K2 heads off into the building and we sort of get, our cliffhanger, which is this, they're closing in on, the Imperials are closing in on Cassian, Melshi, and Clea. And K2 is closing in on the Imperials.
And they do meet with Clay, because that's the great line, right? When Clay opens the door, says, of course it would be you.
Of course it would be you, yeah.
Yeah, once again, the messenger.
And Cassian tries to convince her to come back with them. She is not thrilled about going to Yavin, because she thinks, basically, she'll be treated like an outcast. Doesn't really know what to do with herself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think is confusing to the viewer intentionally, because it's like, why would you not want to go to Yavin? Doesn't everyone want to go to Yavin? What do you know about Yavin that we don't know yet?
Right. And the answer is we'll find out in an episode.
We'll find out soon that Yavin's not all. Yavin's visitor policy hasn't been rewritten for Luke Skywalker yet.
It's the Hotel California. You can
I think if you show up,
never leave.
You show up with Princess Leia, and it's like, oh, special privileges, right? You come with Cassian Andor, and they point guns at you.
And I was worried. This is when, having seen what they did with Bix, I was very worried at the end of this episode, because I think it was like 2 days between watching this episode and the next one, that they were just going to kill Clea out of convenience, because like they wanted Andor to bring the. I was going to be like, guys, that's the worst. Don't do that. I was very happy that's not what happens.
Yeah.
At what point do you think Pendergast realized it was going to go so badly that his life was on the line? This was good, but it really is a two-parter.
Yeah, I mean, it directly leads into the next episode. Jedi Kyber Erso. Oh, you want to use my?
I think I might actually need notes for this one. But
lot happens in this episode.
Yeah. Do you guys want to talk through though the second episode? Or do you want to go straight to the third episode?
I think it is a episode that moves along very quickly. Mm-hmm. It's a high-paced episode. There's some interesting comments from Tony Gilroy where he talks about he kind of doesn't like writing for K2 because when you throw him in, basically nothing can stop him. It's the challenge of having kind of like, it's like having a Hulk, right? It's like, well, he's basically invincible.
Yeah.
And he's just tossing people around. And I think it gets deployed very well here because it is
darkly comic, right? He's like, yeah. Just hits people, knocks them off bridges.
Holds a human shield up.
Yeah. Oh, that,
it is.
That's brutal, but great.
It is. It does seem like significant that, for example, they could just have him walking around with a gun, and the choice where he just like, not, like the first guy who's like, oh, back up. And he's just like, no, you're going to fall 100 levels to off course up to your death. It's weird because it's like, it's kind of like less violent in a way that's also more physically violent than just a laser gun.
He basically keeps, like, he leaves him to essentially the last episode before he actually throws him into a fight, right? It's the last moments of this episode and then the beginning of the next episode. So he deploys him very strategically, I think. And full credit to Alan Tudyk, who, I mean, he's great. He's great at bringing that character to life.
I think whoever animates the eyes, those are my favorite. The eye rolling and the, like, the side glances, like,
because
if
you watch the behind the scenes video where he's just on set in his little mocap costume, like, he's doing facial expressions because he's playing that part.
Oh,
so they're clearly
awesome.
Pulling, like, from some of his looks. Oh, that's a good eye roll. Let's use that. Mm-hmm. I did enjoy his interview where he mentions that he does not crash any spaceships in this.
Did he crash one in?
It's like that happens a lot.
I'm looking forward. We have to go watch Rogue One again after this. The one thing I'd say about this episode too is, again, I really appreciate the ability to find humor and comedy when they go back. So when the ISB is going back to essentially the antique shop, and the woman who is trying to reconstruct the radio, and she gets like, "This is ingenious, right?"
And the other guy who's like, "Too much, too nerdy."
She's like, "We got to get this back to the lab," and then it starts blinking. It's great.
It's good. Really well done.
Yeah,
it's good.
Yeah,
good
scene. Like. You know, I mean, it's nice seeing the people that are like the five levels down Imperial, who it's like. It's just a job to them, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're not evil. They're not in. They just, you know, they just
finality
did a job.
Of evil.
Yeah. So
we don't.
I like there's the prop that looks like a dowsing rod that is used to track stuff. I did wonder a little bit about, like, how long, because they keep tracking, even, you know, and I guess I'm bleeding into the next episode where they're like talking to Clea at length. And I guess her radio is still transmitting because they're still tracking.
It's still powered up. I think once
they're
form a connection.
They're calling her, to use it as a connection or to trace.
Because I was like, turn that off.
Yeah. But they're all distracted.
Why is your conversation so long? And I get it, because it's a horror movie and you're distracted. And why would anyone be, you know, as far as you know, this technology is not easily tracked, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so, Luthen destroyed the radio, right? So what do you have to worry about?
Yeah, what do you have to worry about? So.
All right. Jedha, Kyber, Ursa. Let's see if I can do this multi for memory. So the first thing that happened, well, let me move the microphone first, because Dan's giving me a weird look. So basically what happens is we start with K2 comes in and just finishes his slaughter, and we rescue Clea. Clea's injured.
This is the part where he uses Hirt as a human shield.
Yes.
And that guy, real dead.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
Very effective as a shield.
Partagast just lost three employees to
supervisors.
Hours.
Yeah, he
three
lost
supervisors.
And also failed to recover Clea, who is the one person who knows the Death Star information.
Yeah.
So not good for him. So then basically they just evacuate and leave. I really appreciate that they wrap that up very quickly. We got the tension, we had a good time, but now it's like, let's move on to the rest of the plot. And at this point the plot slits and we go one plot, which is ISB, Partagast, clearly it fails. He meets with we have this, we'll actually come back to that in a second. We go back to Yavin. They land on Yavin, and we can clearly see how much Yavin has evolved even in the past year, and that there are rules, a whole bunch of, like, it's adorable, like 10 people show up with guns, like they're gonna be able to do something. Great scene too, when they're worried they're gonna get shot out of the sky when the rebellion refuses to answer their phone call and ghosts them. Lands them, takes Clea immediately to sick bay. There is a sick bay now. Great, not just a Jedi healer. Good job.
Yeah.
The chef, who's the Jedi healer, Melchi and K2 are sent to not house arrest, but it sounds like the brig. And then Cassian goes to meet with the council and gives the debrief.
The council.
Which was just a really good scene to essentially see basically a democratic leadership with Bail Organa, Oh, some other people. Mon a lot Mothma.
Of the, both of those other characters who are not our major name characters are in that are in on Yavin and Rogue One. We see both of those characters.
Oh, good. That's cool.
Yeah.
So they've got three senators / ex senators, and then a couple military type people. Yeah. I apologize. I don't remember that Mon Calamari's name.
Admiral Raddus.
Yeah, and then people who are not available because it's not the 1970s anymore are mentioned as being away on running errands. Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is where we see that running a military campaign by committee has problems.
Yeah. Yeah. And they shares everything. And obviously the group, they don't know Luthen as well. They question Luthen. They don't trust Luthen. Luthen clearly has survived. And so it's like a spider spinning lies and webs. And when we practice to deceive...
well, except for Mon Mothma, right? Who's the only person quiet
through all of this.
It is interesting because Bail Organa has clearly taken a more central position in the leadership, right?
And he's kind of a jerk.
He is kind of a jerk.
He is.
Well, he's still floating, I think, at this point between legitimacy and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, at the start of A New Hope, he's still a senator. He's still got a senator's ship that, you know, has his daughter on a senator mission on it. So, yeah he's still maintaining, he's got an active cover.
Right.
Whereas Mon Mothma, I think, maybe, you know, what is her role here, right? I mean, especially, she just spent several years of her life doing a mission that basically ended. Right,
right. Well, and she's doing a little diplomacy. She's trying to talk to Saw and basically that's be right. like, "We're trying to help you.
Yeah,
why won't you let us help you, Saw?
But you are paranoid.
I'm Saw Gerrera. Yeah, you know, I don't know if I needed that scene. I feel like that was a little bit of like, we need you to really understand why stuff in Rogue One is the way it is. And I was like, no, I get it. Saw Gerrera is not. Oh. You would be a very difficult coworker.
It was good to see that to remind, like, just to show visually how far Saw has come.
Yes.
And I also wondered with Mon, again, it's so cool to see that there's still secrets within secrets, because during that council scene, it seems like that's the first time that Bail reveals, that Cassian reveals, or Mon reveals, that Cassian was the one that got Mon off Coruscant when he...
Yes.
When,
and there Bail was even asked, kind
it's
of
been like, what, how long has it been since you last saw him? A year? I was there to get Mon out. And the look that Bail just gives her is like, I don't know if she had ever explained what happened. Oh, she couldn't burn her team. She couldn't burn the team because she couldn't burn Lonnie. So she couldn't actually say what happened.
Well, and especially, and does Bail think that he got her out? Right? Because he sent a team.
He sent a team.
He sent a team.
But he's got to know at least one of those people died. Yeah. I mean, unclear.
He may not. Remember, he said, I've never met them.
Yeah, right. Erskine would have known. He's the only person. We don't see him here.
No, but
But Erskine's Luthen's guy.
Yes, right. True. But he's also Moth. He's
I was wondering if Bail was like, didn't I do that? And it's like, no, you did not, sir.
But Mon clearly couldn't say anything because otherwise they'd be burning Lonnie as a contact. But I also appreciate Mon just showing that broader strategy, takes a seat back, is listening, and then she goes to Val. And again, all the scenes with Mon, I actually love this episode for the character building. I think it did a really great job. All these relationships with the characters. And seeing Mon and Val interact as sort of an aunt and niece, and just being around each other. And there's that scene at the end where they're just sitting and talking, Val's talking and Mon's looking off in the distance thinking at breakfast. It was just really nice stuff. And Mon goes to Val and says, go to Cassian and suss this out. Val goes to Cassian, and I appreciate that it was great to see like two old war veterans and contrast the relationship now versus the start of the show and just like how much more comfortable around they are in each other, how more grizzled they are. And I appreciate Val also doesn't beat around the bush. She says exactly what she's there for.
Yeah.
Cassian tells her, or Val, and then I presume Val goes to Mon and tells her she trusts him. And then there's something else going on in the background that this is a little confusing to me, but there's this guy off planet, Tivik.
So that's the lead in for Rogue One.
Yeah. Who keeps calling, keeps calling, keeps calling, and eventually they just need to send Cassian.
Yeah, he's in Kafreen and he's got info. He's their contact with Saw. So there's something. He's like embedded with Saw and they're kind of spying on him, because that's the bit where they like, you know, cop to during the meeting. They're like, oh, he's so paranoid that he thinks we're trying to infiltrate them. And it's like, actually, yeah, we're totally doing that. Because he's a loose cannon, right? Yeah. Like, we need to keep tabs on him.
We're doing that. We've done it before. Willman, stay out of camera frame. You know, like, I mean, I love this show. I think it's a great season. I think this episode has some weird stuff because
Oh, I love this episode, Tony.
Well,
they know where they need to go.
And they know where they need to go. And so, for example, it's like we're telling you the name of a character that appears in the movie that we made 8 years ago that maybe you don't remember. And we're not going to show you him because we probably don't want to pay for the actor.
Yeah,
and it's like, but also, is that character that big a deal? And it's like, maybe kind of.
Yeah, that was confusing. I'll agree with you on that. I did see them,
Tony Gilroy, saying like, I went as far as figuring out, can we get Daniel Mays, who's the actor, back here? How much do we need to de-age him? We should see what he looks like now. I haven't seen Daniel Mays since then. They probably would need to do some work.
So I think there's a lot of good stuff in here. I think it's weird because this is a TV show prequel to a movie that literally goes up to like basically minutes or hours
before
the thing.
All the way up.
Yeah.
I think I didn't expect that. I thought there would be a year or months time jump, right, between the thing.
Because it's 1 year before Bally Evan, but it's sometime during
that
year.
Yes. It's like, actually, it's like big clock in the corner.
A year before the Battle of Yavin.
But the thing that kind of trips me up, it doesn't feel like the season finale or series finale.
Yes.
I mean, because it's kind of not. But it's weird because I guess I'm used to, as a consumer of TV, to want that. And it's not that. And so that's my problem and not the show's problem. But it's very weird because it's not. Like, it's like, and this is what's going
to
go on.
I find this is one of the most satisfying endings to a show that I've watched in a long time.
How do you feel about Rogue One? Because it's my favorite movie. Okay, so you like an ending that includes a movie.
No, but what I liked about that's six
seasons in a movie, Tony.
Yeah,
I feel like whenever they do that, it doesn't work. But when you do the movie and then the TV show after, it works much better.
Well, the TV show before.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. But just to quickly go through, because a bunch of plot twists, just so we don't forget.
Are you saying that you don't like Star Trek Insurrection? Is that what you're saying? Sorry, we already mentioned one Star Trek movie. It's not worth getting into.
Yeah, Star Trek Generations is the only one matters. The one with whales in Chekhov's hospital. Real quick, so great.
That is how people remember it. Yes,
Chekhov's hospital. Yeah. That's what you call the episode, Dan.
We don't name the episodes.
We have this season.
What I like is that they wrap the carousel. We see Partagas commit suicide rather than essentially getting court-martialed.
Which suggests that things in the ISB
not going so well.
It's very, very last days of the Reich energy where his buddy comes in and is like, I know what you're going to do.
He also is
listening. The scene where the stormtroopers are like, he's like, no, you're good.
He also listening to Nemec's Manifesto.
He is listening to Nemec's Manifesto.
Right before that. It was phenomenal.
Did you great that basically Nemec lives on
years later, 5 years later,
and it's like, I wondered, is he listening to this because it's been intercepted, or they've been, and we're like, does he listen to it every day? Is it being transmitted over the radio? And it's like, it doesn't really matter so much as just the fact that Nemec's manifesto has gotten to like this guy high up in ISB, and he asks his buddy,
How do you feel about this? You've heard this. I take it you've heard this before, right? Like, so it's out there.
And they say we can't stop it. Like, it's showing something along the lines. It's getting out there more and more. It's everywhere. But I also love, like, what do you think? Like, he asked that his final question right before he takes his life is essentially, I think, some doubt about what he's doing.
Well, he can ask in that moment, right? Any other time, if he asked that question, that would be treason. Yes. But he knows it doesn't matter at this point.
Another sign of a form of rebellion.
Double treason does not have a worse penalty.
Yeah,
but it's all the different ways of rebellion. So there's Partagas. There's Dedra, who ends up back in the prison.
Yeah.
If not Narkeena 5, then something pretty much the same.
Matching outfits. Well, I imagine Narkeena 5 and she's working on Death Star bits.
Yeah, somebody pointed that out. And maybe she's responsible in some ways for the Death Star being destroyed.
I guess. She did presumably violate laws, she really got betrayed by the system there, right? I mean,
The system doesn't care. And again, I think this is just
showing.
The
system doesn't care. And basically, if anyone around her was not dead now, you'd think that somebody, like Partagas, would say, like, well, that doesn't make sense. Like, you know, we don't.
But you don't have any friends left, right? Because
you have no
friends left. Bridges.
And like, Cyril's mom's not going to help you. And then the other final two are
make a call to the uncle.
I did not expect
Carlo.
To see.
Finally comes in.
But Luthen
finally
died.
We see him.
Was that was on this when we were talking about Uncle Harlow's Luthen?
Yeah, that was okay. The conspiracy theory somebody sent us last
great
week.
Great conspiracy theory. Look, the final one, did not expect
who are
to see
you?
Perrin.
Well, I'm your dead ex-boyfriend's mother's uncle, and I'm here to help you.
That's some serious Spaceballs energy.
Yeah, you're a little short for an uncle.
Love Perrin, seeing Perrin like living a life and seemed deeply unhappy and sleeping with the mom of his daughter's wife's or his wife's husband's mother.
His daughter's mother-in-law.
Mother-in-law.
Yeah.
Just going to parties.
But looking like, I mean, this was what I said to you at the time was like, he was a little bit of a careful what you wish for. Like, he had a bit of a monkey's paw moment where he's like, I don't really like my wife and I'm not happy. And now he's like, okay, you can just go to parties all the time and be hammered. And he's like, that's not so great.
Oh.
Yeah, no. It turns out he's a sad drunk.
And then we'll get to Bix living on back on the Rye Planet with Theresa May.
Also, we see B2.
B2, so I was so excited for that one.
B2, not mentioned for several years because droids, not technically people in Star Wars.
According only to you, Tony.
I think Tony Gilroy says that is his greatest, the greatest droid ever is B2, and he created it.
Okay.
Like he went strong on that one, which is fine.
Anyways, tons of stuff to talk about there.
Yeah. I wanted to mention something.
Scene of Saw looking out a window at a Star Destroyer. Or why not?
Because, again, continuity.
Yeah.
So, some interesting look stuff. Yes, we are bringing Mon Mothma into continuity by having her
with
look
haircuts.
The same.
Yeah.
But she looks... She has no... Like, there's no product in her hair. She's not... No. Somebody describes it like a glow down, right? It's like the... But she's living in a ziggurat.
Yeah.
You know?
They do not...
The options are low.
They have a med bay, but they do not have a hairdresser.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, Melshi gets a buzz cut.
Melshi, well, he's had it this entire season, but I like all this, the stuff with Clea. The montage at the end, I think, is real strong for a montage. I mean, I that is a tough thing to make work, but like, it is her, I think, finally, you know, you talked about Kat mentioning like she's still grieving and how we see it, but this is like kind of her moving towards acceptance and realizing, I think, that she helped create this. Like, this is her legacy, and Luthen's legacy is we did do something. We did accomplish something. And so I love seeing that for her, and she gets that great moment with Vel.
I ship those two so much.
Yeah, which I think it kind of like, but you remember their interactions in the past have been
so
very
catty.
Strained. Like, they didn't like each other. And here there is the camaraderie of the being the ones who live, essentially, right? Which Vel and Cassian also have, right? They go through all the various people who they've lost and the planets and everything. And there's even that bit like where she says something about, I can't remember which planet. Are they talking about Ferrix or Aldani? Where they're like, oh, you know, people say, or Gorman, people say they
it's
were
unclear
there.
Which one they're saying
you
about
know?
It. Yeah.
And she says something like, I'd kill anybody who said that to me. You know?
And he's like, you would, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Right. And like that moment is great, right? It is chills because like, you know, they've been through this, right? All the way back to Aldani, like, and I love that vibe. Again, it's the survivor's guilt. Like, we're the only ones here. We're the ones who made it. So we gotta make good.
Your hope is that they will make, Clay was so good. Dan's idea was that they should make a new show where just she's like the spy master at Yavin and run like between A New Hope through Return of the Jedi. What
they
is Clay up
spies.
To?
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
presumably
you know,
have a network.
You've got her, you've got Vel, you've got Mon Mothma. I think that kind of interestingly, when I saw Tony Gilroy talking about this, he talks about this being at the end about these five women, essentially, who are like kind of, you know, I think Vel, Clea, Mon Mothma, Bix, and Dedra are kind of like the arc, all of whom live.
Yeah.
You know, and like they kind of are the heart of the show in some way. And again, you look at so many of these characters and feel like there is I think what I said to you was, and this comes up in a piece of mail we got, but I'll say it here, which is, if you're Kathy Kennedy and you're looking at your Star Wars slate and you should be thinking to yourself, gee, prestige Star Wars. Huh. People seem to like it.
Dan, what if we do another Darth Maul show and he's on Tatooine?
Can we throw money at someone else involved with the product? Tony Gilroy, fine.
Yeah.
He's had
presumably
he's
got people under him.
But
right?
Sure, I mean, Bo Willimon worked a bunch on this show. There's any number of other producers and writers and stuff
and
like that.
You know, I mean, obviously, Tony Gilroy made an amazing show happen. But there were lots of other directors and writers that worked on this, right?
I mentioned Bo Willimon because Bo Willimon also was instrumental in Severance in recent seasons. Yeah. And like he worked on House of Cards, all this
stuff. Other people are like, I'm going to write and direct everything. So this is obviously, he's got the vision, but presumably there's people that came up
working on this. Heck, his brother, Dan Gilroy, who also worked on this. John Gilroy, his other brother, also worked on this. Like, there's a lot of people. And I feel like there is a rich possibility for a show that is like, let's continue sort of this vein of like, what does it mean now that you've you blew up the Death Star, but you haven't won the war. And like, what do you still have to knit together these disparate alliances? You still have to kind of navigate what's going on. There's some interesting stuff there.
You know, you think about how little of the rebellion we actually see like after the Battle of Hoth, because our story follows our heroes, and it's like what's going on with everybody else, right? Like there's stuff in there that could be totally worth exploring.
It's basically
the fleet, or wherever, right? I mean, you know, there's a million stories you can tell that aren't set on Tatooine.
And we're finding them.
They're like grains of sand on Tatooine.
That's why I love that last. I was joking with Dan, like, it's basically the reverse Tom Cruise. It's just Diego Luna walking rather than running, and slow motion of it's he walks, he passes all the people, and it's sort of he's picking up the threads as he goes along, and you just see all the different, like, LG running, Val and Mon having breakfast, and you just see all the different characters and their threads and how it comes together to form this great thing that is the rebellion on Yavin. And that's what I thought was so beautiful and so well done.
It's interesting. I feel like I saw some people that were kind of confused by some of the stuff that's shown in this episode, right? In terms of the, like, you know, the committee that doesn't want to listen to our hero Andor. Guys, the show's named after him. He's on to something here. The weird phone call with Saw, you know, Clea not wanting to go to Yavin. And, you know, I think it's the tricky thing where I think there's a bunch of people who are like, but the rebellions, those are our friends, right?
Luke Skywalker.
And it's like, it's complicated, guys, right? And then, you know, messy. That is the thesis of this show, is that, like, yeah, things aren't great.
I wanted to pull up, if I can find it, the Gilroy quote about basically who this, he says something to the, this show is about the people that are the gravel the revolution is built on and forgotten. And I was like, dang.
Yeah.
That hits hard.
And it's, I mean, it's real. I mean, I think if you look at, you know, political strife and the histories of revolutions and upheavals, like, people coming together is complicated, and people are mad that, you know, so and so is not following along, and they reject the person that maybe started the organization. Yeah. And there's all these things about, like, what is the right thing to believe and the right way to espouse that at the right time.
How it gets through and cycle,
and who, right? Like, that's the other part of it, is like, yes, you see maybe one or two people as the figureheads or the faces of a movement, but a movement is by definition many people.
And it's so, more than the people, right?
And it's even straight at the top, like, especially the thing about, like, the Russian revolutions and, like, Stalin and Lenin, like, oh yeah, it was like two leaders, and you get into it, it's like, oh no, this is complicated, and a lot of people hated each other. And it is nice. That's a great quote, Dan, thank you for sharing that. And it's just it's so true. I mean, come on, it's hard enough to schedule a meeting in, like, corporate America. Like, can you?
Those people are paid to be there. You know, I mean, it is interesting that, I mean, basically Luthen was correct, right? And Luthen won. And it's sad that basically in his success, he inherently doesn't get to be part of that, right?
Which he predicted. He knew.
He always knew that.
He knew.
And I think the only people who can survive in the rebellion are the ones who are going to be okay with never seeing it. And I think both Cassian and Luthen know that. I also find it a little hilarious that we're like, oh, it's so sad they don't remember Cassian or Luthen later. I was like, well, because they were invented after the original show. So, of course, there's no mention of them. So it's really easy to play that card.
It is interesting, too, the nature of the sort of destiny that comes into it, right? Like, mostly Tony Gilroy shied away from the mystical and religious elements, right? We got the Force Healer in last week's episode.
I love when Cassian makes eye contact.
Cassian nods at her, like, as he's going out. But, like, coupled with, as you said, Luthen. I mean, Luthen predicts his own fate, right? In his speech at the end of episode of season one, where he talks about what does he sacrifice? Everything. And it's true. Yeah. He does. He sacrifices his life. He sacrifices everything he can for the rebellion. And so both he and Cassian kind of have their endpoints already set out for themselves right at the beginning of the show.
It's tricky because, I mean, Cassian and Jyn Erso basically get to die as heroes. Luthen does not.
No.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, Luthen has been rejected and is on his own and then will be killed because he knows too much by someone who he loves, basically.
But that's where I'd love to see a story more with Clea and Val and Mon, is because they know the story, right? And how does that story get carried on in the future, especially as we continue to go through this scouring effect on the myth that becomes the rebellion? And that is why, like, some point, I would love a series that comes after Return of the Jedi that talks about actually setting up the New Republic. But I want it in an Andor style way, right? Yes. That is messy. And I want the West Wing, right? I want the West Wing in space.
There's something there. The one other thing I want to say before I forget, and maybe I've already forgotten, I do think the Luthen stuff is really interesting when you look at, like, the way the council views him, right? Because I love Cassian's point, like, none of you would be here without him. Mm. But they don't even know, right? He was that much of a spy master and moving all the pieces on the board that most of them don't even realize his effect. They just felt the vibrations of it. And I think that's kind of great. It is a testament to him as a, like, puppet master, spy master, whatever you want to call him. But it's also your unfortunate fate is... the thing in the center of the web doesn't always survive because it gets a lot of attention.
Can we talk about Bix real quick?
Yes, right. That was the other thing we should talk about.
So, folks may remember my rant about Bix last episode, and I promised to throw something across the room if it turned out Bix was pregnant, and that was the reason
she left. What
did
you throw?
So, I would like to slightly recant a statement, and that I think I didn't throw anything. It actually made me cry.
She tried to.
I thought it was incredibly well done, and here is why I was okay with it. One, they brought back the droid. I didn't think they were going to bring back the droid. I was very happy about the droid. I was worried they had just, like, left him on the ridge. Bix wasn't pregnant. She'd already had the baby. That was also nice. But the fact was, there will be a sub-paragraph to the statement, but the first one is they ended on it, so it was actually not about Bix, but it was about the baby and representing hope, right? And that's what I thought was absolutely beautiful and wonderful, was, like, ending on that. And I'll tear up again because it was so pretty.
I thought it was interesting that they went back to called Mina Rao. I call it Space Nebraska. I mean, it's Star Wars. They could have gone anywhere. They could have shown us a shot of her on some planet that we don't recognize. And I thought it was interesting that they took her back there. And what does that say about, like, you know, I mean, because she could have gone anywhere.
But
right?
I think really pays a place to, like, it's a bountiful harvest and crop. It seems peaceful. It's idyllic. It's bucolic. It's all those things that actually, like, I think really appeal to us. So it made sense to me they placed her there. And there's, like, a family and people and a community.
And more than that, she has memories of Cassian, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it is a place that they had that was their home. Right. It was a place that they connected. And I think it enables her not only for her to feel connected to him, but also for her to be able to raise their child someplace
and
that has a connection with him. You don't want to take him to Ferrix.
She can't go back to Ferrix.
You can't go back to Ferrix. No.
And so Ferrix that's the next best thing, right?
It's a horrible place to be, but, like, she liked it here. She had a job here. She has things to do here.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna say, like, I mean, presumably there's a bunch of planets that are, like, beaches and, like, it's a vacation all the time.
Don't remember Nyamos?
Nyamos was dirty. Not good, man.
I'm just saying,
Space Miami,
Space
Nebraska,
like, green Doritos,
Space Grease, Pabu or whatever it was called.
Oh, Pabu was nice. Very nice. That's where I would go.
Bad Batch is higher.
Bad Batch hasn't discovered it. Yeah.
So my issue with Bix, and made me realize, is, like, I was actually very happy with it that it ended there, and I think they were very clear in the story they want to tell there, and I loved it. It was incredibly uplifting. But I still come back to my issue is, so I have no issue with Bix leaving. I am okay with the reason now why she left, because how they handled it.
She survived childbirth, which is a real touch and go in Star Wars.
The issue is I still struggle. They didn't know what they're doing with Bix on Yavin. And I come back to the simplest of things, to, like, if they had given Bix a job, I think I would have been okay with it.
She'd been sitting there with a wrench.
Yeah.
That would have been fine.
Something. But that's, I think, the real issue I had with it is, like, Bix was just set dressing for the second and third triptychs. For the third triptychs, it was just, that's what irritated me. Okay with her, and I was pretty happy.
Especially when you jump forward a year, right? Right. Yeah. Like that's, yeah. Like, it's
the thing I liked. Like,
yeah, we have this character in stasis. Sorry.
Yeah, the thing I liked about it, I agree. I think it was shot very well, and they apparently knew going in, like, that's where we're going to. And I think Tony Gilroy said, and Adrienne Arjona said that, like, he told her, like, this is kind of where you're going with this. I think what works about it is it also is about her getting through all the terrible things that have happened to her and able to still have hope at the end, right? Like the trauma, the drugs, like all of that, she has come back around and she has managed to make something good in her life. And I think that was, again, it's about the hope that really plays well there. I think it also meshes with the goodbye scene, you know, where she really is like, it makes sense to her. Like, if I told Cassian we were going to have a kid, he would absolutely drop everything and we go. And like, for whatever reason, I have bought into what that force healer says, like, and you know, people have religious faith and whatever. And I think that's part of what we're seeing here is part of her coming out from the other side of her trauma and the challenges she overcame was maybe some sort of belief in like something in the universe and her feeling like it really was important for Cassian to be able to go do this, because he would not have been able to go do the Rogue One stuff. He would not have been able to put his life in danger. If he knew, if I had a kid, and the answer was, well, I can go.
Dan, you do have a kid.
What? You do have a kid, no, Dan.
But I'm not going to go, and that's why I'm not going to go stop the Death Star. I want to stay at home.
No. Why do you still drive the way you do then? Explain that. So, listeners, Dan is actually a much safer driver.
I have to feel alive, Tony.
No, he really, it's remarkably different. Thank you.
Also, anyway, I backseat drive all the time. Oh, also, totally unrelated, but because you mentioned, you said something that sparked a memory here. Can we briefly talk about when they are packing up Luthen's shop for the Empire? They come across the slab that is later used for the wolf mural in Rebels.
Oh, yeah, with the hand signals on it.
And we finally know how the Emperor got it. It was a Luthen shop.
Yeah. Yeah, because the Emperor has it. The Empire shows. So the timing of that, I gotta think through the timing of that, because that is the last season of Rebels.
Does that work out? Maybe they have multiple slabs. I don't know.
It could be multiple slabs. You might be right.
But it's definitely the same design.
Clearly the Emperor has a little committee of that's focused on
Jedi relics.
Jedi relics with the father and the daughter and the son.
I like that a little bit though.
His special group that works on that kind of, you know.
Should we do some mail? Because we do have some mail. I know we've already gone for a while, but let's go through here.
Before we do that, final thoughts going around. Like, we just ended the season.
The show.
Overall thoughts, grades, final parting thoughts before we go into the mail? Before our minds are sullied by other people's opinions?
A movie you like? A movie you... A good, bad movie? Story?
Yeah.
No.
What's your movie of the year?
No. Is it still... Dunkirk. Never change, Kat. Obviously, it's great. It's some of the best Star Wars. We're beyond, is this the best Star Wars, into, you know, where does this rank in terms of, you know, good prestige TV, at large. It's very good. I hope more people watch it. I think it's kind of sad that there's probably a lot of people that will never watch it because it's a Star Wars show and they don't want to watch a Star Wars show. Mm.
It's fantastic piece of work, as you said. I think, again, as I said earlier, I think if you don't look at this and think we should be doing more Star Wars like this, then I don't know what you're doing. It's confident, right? And I think that's amazing. Whenever you talk about prestige storytelling, it's about confidence, right? It's about feeling like I can tell this story in this way and it will be compelling. And it's absolutely the case here. It's hard for me to even think about how to put it there, because this manages to, I would not have thought a prequel to a prequel would in any way be compelling. And
but he had something to say.
It is kind of fascinating. And I think part of it, it's not a small part of it is the, without making this too real, the moment in time in which they're seeing this, it makes it incredibly resonant. And I'm not saying that it wouldn't always be resonant to a degree, but I think a lot of people, it hit at a right time, right? And I don't think even necessarily that was intentional, but
You don't think that Tony Gilroy worked to manufacture the political climate that we're living in now?
Certainly hope not.
Yeah, that would feel very differently about things.
Well, Dan, he had to in order to make this show hit the way it did.
He's dedicated. I'll say that Dan, about him.
Their marketing budget is dangerous. Tony Gilroy, you're good. Please, please don't come for me.
Please go buy some Supreme Court justices. Yeah, I would agree with what both you said. I think the only thing I'll add is I was thinking when season two started, I was worried, how will they ever be able to, I'm thinking back to season one, like season one accomplished and said so much. How will season two ever been able to do that? And even it caught up on me as watching every episode. I was like, oh, we're going, it's good, but is it good as season one? And I think one of the most marvelous things about this show is like it goes slow to go fast, if that makes sense. It takes its time in telling stories. So by the time you sort of pull up, you realize like, oh man, we started the season back on Chandrilla at a wedding, right? And you think about all the things that have happened since then, and any single moment, it didn't feel rushed, it didn't feel paced, it didn't feel like haphazard, it didn't feel like what is going on, which has happened in some other of the shows we've watched Star Wars. And then at the very end, you're like, you have said so much in so little. And I think one of the things I'm most excited is to someday go back and rewatch these.
Yeah.
And it's going to be very easy and appealing to do because it's only, 24 episodes? Two seasons? Mm-hmm.
And that's what are you doing tomorrow?
Yeah. Playing soccer at 9 in the morning.
to that point, like, again, things they're talking about behind the scenes that I think inform some of this. One, when you mentioned, like, kind of get to the end here, there was a bit where a quote from the composer where he talked about we've been shifting over the course of the season from the electronic to the orchestral, and then we let, as Cassian is taking off there at the end, it really goes into full orchestral moment to kind of segue into Rogue One, which we hadn't really done before.
Oh, that's really cool.
And then Tony Gilroy also talking a little bit about the production of the show and mentioning that a lot of what they did was having meetings about all these details before they shot, and they did not really have writers on set changing things. And you feel like, again, if you prepare and you do all your work ahead of time, it comes out feeling very confident and very put together, as opposed to, we got to rewrite some of this dialogue on the fly, or we got to re-edit this stuff because we don't really know how it's going to land. Like,
yeah,
it's not perfect, but like, it's pretty darn good.
Yeah.
Do we want to do a quick reminder of the live action shows that you don't think about anymore?
No, because I don't think about them anymore.
Well, you know, we had The Mandalorian, which had, you know, a really good first season and some ups and downs. Okay. Yeah. Book of Boba Fett, technically a separate show from The Mandalorian. God,
that was so bad.
That was the second live action Star Wars show.
So bad.
Book of Boba Fett. Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Really good, but forget it happens.
So forgettable.
I just don't think about it at all.
The Little Girl was really good, though.
And Jimmy Smits.
Yeah. He's been replaced.
Should have been a movie.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah. It was good, though. I really enjoyed it in the moment. I just don't remember
There's a lot of things in there I think it meandered and I would have changed. Like, there's too much. It didn't have quite enough to make a show, and it was too much for a movie. So,
Ahsoka, a show I do not think about very much.
Only because I think about my disappointment about it.
Yeah, you're not mad. You're just disappointed. Yeah.
No, I'm
mad.
I like all those characters and Rebels, and I just feel like it resembles it in any way.
It does. It's weird because it's like a pantomime of Rebels, and it feels like Dave Filoni did not have a plan. Dave Filoni has now reached, he's come all the way around where now he is George Lucas saying he has a plan and does not have a plan. You've fulfilled the prophecy.
Yeah, achieved.
You've brought balance to the Force. The Acolyte. I do think about The Acolyte.
I like The Acolyte.
I think it really aimed high and did not manage. Yeah, Manny Jacinto was great. There were so many parts of that show that is great, but it was a hot mess.
Yeah, like, that's where I think about that versus Andor, where like I think The Acolyte wanted to be of the level of Andor.
It tried.
And boy, it tried. Yeah, but Kat, we don't reward effort; we reward results.
Well, I would reward it still. I would still put The Acolyte higher than Ahsoka or Boba Fett.
Well, yeah, Boba Fett.
Just so we're clear, everything's about Book of Boba Fett. I want to be
weird show that was.
I want to be 100% clear that I'm not.
You want to talk about Vespas, or are we?
You know, again, and that was. I mean, I'm kind of worried about is the like. you know, with Tony Gilroy basically saying, I'm done with Star Wars now. I did it for a million years. I'm good. And the Acolyte not being a big hit, that
it's really unclear. Like,
are they gonna try more big expensive swings? And then the most recent one, which I don't think about a lot, but I don't. Yeah, Skeleton Crew. I don't. Yeah, I think, you know, I think it did what it set out to do very solidly, which, you know, is not something that every Star Wars show
I think about
that do.
A lot. I think about it as like, I don't remember, Goonies in Space. I really enjoyed Goonies in Space. It was fun. It was funny. Very fun.
I thought it was a great looking show, especially compared to some of the other shows, which often feel disjointed and the stunts don't quite work and stuff like that, which just, I don't know, there's just weird quality. Some of them doesn't quite feel like they know how to shoot it. And that show felt like they knew exactly what they were trying to shoot and exactly the story they were trying to tell.
It's great.
Yeah.
And Jude Law was evil. It was good.
Jude Law was evil.
Yeah.
Spoilers, by the way, for everyone.
There's one kind of garbage episode in there, but you know, it's generally fine.
Mostly pretty
All right. All right. So there's that. We should just mail. Go to sleep.
Yep. As a reminder, you can reach us. We are on Blue Sky at acp.theincomparable.com. We are on Mastodon at acp@zeppelin.flights, and we are on email. At ACP.
And you should use those ways to communicate with us when you're communicating spoilers, and not directly to us. No, not naming any names.
We appreciate your enthusiasm.
Yeah, it's your enthusiasm wonderful. Is the best.
We are sometimes slow at watching TV. All right.
And you're so fast.
Steven writes in, just sharing this post after watching the last episode. I love this theory / headcanon. Looking forward to hearing your last Andor discussion. For now, he shared an amazing post that I want to share with both of you, which is on Reddit in our Andor conspiracy theory. The Empire didn't need Kalkite.
Wait,
here
what?
Is my wild conspiracy theory. The Kalkite and Gorman wasn't actually necessary to complete the Death Star power system. It was all part of a ruse by Galen Erso to try and delay completion of the battle station. He chose a very rare mineral as a key component of the reactor design, knowing full well the Empire couldn't get enough of it without doing something absurd, like demolishing a prosperous and influential core world planet. It probably even looked like he had succeeded, as they wasted a good 5 years researching synthetic alternatives he probably knew were not viable. However, he vastly underestimated the Empire's capacity for callous cruelty and deceit. This terrible failure likely weighed heavily on Erso and contributed to him desperately reaching out to the Rebellion and leading to the events of Rogue One. It would also partly explain why the second Death Star is completed so quickly. The Imperial engineers who took over from Erso realized the Kalkite was not needed and a far cheaper and easier to obtain substitute could be used instead. There were likely a lot of efficiencies that they discovered by undoing sabotage and obstructions that Erso had implemented.
So, I was thinking
I love
about
this.
That.
It's amazing.
I'm
yeah, no,
this.
It's great. Yeah. I was thinking about the timelines in terms of when do we see them start on the Death Star? And they're like, does that basically mean they already had to have been working on Death Star 2 before Death Star 1 was finished?
It's cheaper to build 2 than 1.
Okay. Well, it's like that way they can salvage the parts from it. But
I'll scale. You know, you make it up in volume, Tony.
Yeah.
They're not selling them, Dan. I'm just, the second one gets built real fast, is what I'm saying.
It does get built real fast. Yeah. But once you know how to do it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I enjoyed that immensely.
That
Thank
was
you.
Good.
Thank you, Steven, for passing that along. All right. We had a lot of mail. Sorry, guys. There's a lot. People feel very excited about this.
As they should. It's good television.
John writes, enjoyed ACP this week and agreed with Kat's point, especially Ray Bix. How do you watch the episodes? Episode 8 hit super hard for me because I watched them one a night, and that episode sat with me all day. I kept humming Les Mis and Valley Highland, We Are the Gore, all day at work, even now while out walking. Mm. P.S. Clea equals Secret Leia recast. We didn't discuss that one before, I don't think. Also, one of their conspiracy theories that was going around was that Clea is Cassian's sister. Tony Gilroy said, everybody was Cassian's sister at some point, and then turned to the interviewer and said, you were Cassian's sister for 5 minutes or something.
He does. There is the shot where he's thinking about his sister.
Yes, that was a nice bit of callback.
But I think it's just a reference to some old times.
Yeah. Unfinished business. Yeah. It'll kind of haunt him for the rest of his life, which is unfortunately not that long.
Oh, it was. I was wondering because, I mean, that's a dude that has a lot of loss before he even goes all the way in, because he loses his sister, he loses his father. His mother die, you know. Yeah.
So, I took that scene as more of the classic, that there was a clock ticking in the background as he saw her. And I took that more of the clock counting down into his own death until he saw his sister again, and more of sort of like an afterlife thing is how I interpreted that scene, rightly or wrongly.
Could be that. Could be something about, you know, destiny and like...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of possibilities. Matthias says, so ACP asking for a friend, on a scale from zero to negative infinity, how bad is Astrocation? That's an Astrocation joke, but with cat's name in it.
That's the high score I can give is a zero?
Yes, I think that's correct.
Okay. I give it the full like 5 zeros.
Nailed it. Says Cat Benish.
All right, that worked out great. Matthias also says, when is your Clone Wars recap coming? I've heard there are some episodes there.
Oh, we can just do them episode by episode.
Oh, no.
There's so many episodes. I've never even watched them all.
Sitting out on Bomb
I've seen
Jedi.
Them all so many times.
David writes, do you think that Mon Mothma's driver might have heard her speech and decided to go help her? The scene cleverly doesn't give us a hint as to his intentions, but of course, Cassian couldn't take the chance. P.S. I also find subtitles distracting. I can't keep myself from reading them, not paying attention to the rest of the frame.
Totally agree.
I don't think her driver was going to help.
We know he's an agent.
He's on the phone with ISB, basically.
No, yeah. But he hears the speech and he's listening to it. And there's a thinking, don't give me that look. There's like a thinking phase on his face. I think there is a reasonable doubt.
I can't wait to his backstory in the inevitable novelization. Also, the action figure.
Lego action figure.
Nope, I think he's a bad guy.
Figs.
Brent writes, the Disney Plus workaround to their non-standard player, by the way, is to use Siri. If you ask, what did they just say? It gives you the 10-second replay with the subtitles.
Oh.
That was always the case. They added the jump back thing on the remote later, but I forget. It says, Mattingly, Siri no longer fades out on its own. You have to hit the back button to have unimpeded video. The conspiracy of torture never ends. Mm. Thank you, Brent. We'll keep that in mind. Eric writes, I think Kat called it last week in ACP. I thought it was the only real motivation that made sense. I don't think there was a hint. This is in reference to the pregnancy. Mm.
I will also say that I in my mind, I've also retconned that Bix did have a job, and I think that this actually solves multiple problems, and that Bix's job as an engineer, assigned this to Dan, was to make medals for heroes, and because she was the only one who could do it when she left.
There was like one left, and she was like, I don't have time for that.
And that's why Chewbacca does not have a medal in A New Hope. That's the only canon that I can make work.
Yep, also, so many people at that ceremony. Where were you guys?
Yeah, there are a lot of people. Every time they go back to that and I look at it again, I think to myself, also, the part that got me, and this was fairly recently, was a large proportion of them are wearing pilot suits. Was the limiting
matching
factor ships
too.
I guess
it like could be ships. Could be ships. Yeah,
I guess so.
Yeah.
The ADHDM writes, I love the bit with the two techs who fix the lock. It felt straight out of the Simple Sabotage. I don't really know. I guess that's a Simple Sabotage field manual. That's an OSS manual from the 1940s.
The two which lock?
Who fixed the lock on the Senate chamber. Maybe this question is answered. Oh, good.
Those kids had got Nemec's manifesto in a zine. That's right. It's like, you know.
You seen this? This is rad.
Yeah. Dan? Wizard.
Maybe this question is answered by the last three episodes. I haven't watched them yet, but were we supposed to know what was up with Vel asking about that gun? I saw somebody break this down, and it's kind of incredible.
There's an image that shows the chain of events on it, and I think we didn't have it quite right last time.
So Cassian takes it off Cyril on Ferrix?
Yeah.
Yeah, and basically has him at gunpoint with it way back in season one and takes it, has it on Aldani. And basically,
and
somebody asks about it, and he says he took it off a corporate cop in Morlana. And then when he stashes it on Nyamos before he gets arrested, and then when he and Melchi get out of Narkeena 5, he gives it to Melchi.
But it basically has a logo or a mark of something that it's corporate security on it. So it's significant. Both, I believe, Vel sees it, and it's well significant that it has that symbol on it, but also she's seeing it for the second time because she saw it on Aldani.
Right. She knows it's Cassian's gun at that point.
Yeah.
And I don't
know. So it's
know...
like, that gun's been around.
Right. And I don't remember, do Cassian and Vel interact earlier in the season before they're back on Yavin? I don't think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they run across each other because they're in Gorman, but not the same time.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, so it's kind of a wild little Easter egg that was planted way back in season one. Finally, this is from the ADHM still. I actually own a taxidermied spider. My 11-year-old loves spiders and has had this molt of a Goliath. Well, maybe it's supposed to be mold of a Goliath bird eater.
No, it's a molt of it.
Is it a molt? Okay.
Because it's the exoskeleton.
Oh, cool. Hanging on their bedroom wall since they were four. Also, Cat they're a big TPK balance. Fan, and we're very excited about watching D-More on Jeopardy. Fortunately,
Cat doesn't care for that either.
Full credit to ADHM, who did hide the picture.
Okay.
I still haven't looked at it because I don't want to see it. No, I don't want to see it. All right.
Why do you want to see it?
Oh my God. It's incredible and terrifying.
All right. There you are. Adrienne writes, what is that device that Hirt is using to track down Clea? It looks like a divining rod. Made me laugh. I haven't watched the last episode yet because my husband is making me wait until tomorrow with his silly one episode per day rule. I've actually been divining twice in my life. Weirdly enough.
Did you find water either time?
No. One of them was at Stonehenge, which is kind of a wacky place to do it.
Well, okay, if you're good at go dowsing, that's the place to do it. But I just think, you know, you get dowsing, you go dowsing once, shame on them. You go dowsing twice.
The other time was in Wales when I was staying at an Airbnb with a lovely, kind old gentleman who looked like Edmund Gwen from Miracle on 34th Street as Santa Claus.
Well, I would probably go dowsing twice.
And was a retired plumber and said that he used it to find water mains. And I had no reason to disbelieve him because he was so nice and
dowsing
charming.
Does it actually work?
No.
No.
It's not a real thing. Also, well, do it with a stick. In both cases, they had me holding, you like hold like curved pieces of metal and they swing together or apart.
Mm.
There's a variety of ways to do it. Yeah.
Anyways.
Wait, I say a variety of ways to do it.
Not find water.
People employ dowsing in a variety of ways. I don't know. Maybe we're going to find out there's some weird space magic about how it works, but probably not.
Here we go. I'm going to ignore all the actual answers and instead get the Reddit answer.
Oh.
Which says, apparently it does work, but only for certain people and potentially only in certain directions and during certain times of day.
I'm going to say no.
I think you've just described what I call random chance.
Yeah,
that was the first AI.
So you're saying
results.
There's a chance? Yeah. Oh,
that was random chance.
Matthias was back to say, and I amuse this because I got these two back to back. Matthias came back to say, watched season two, and up to the last minutes, I thought Kat was wrong, but # Kat was right.
Mm-hmm.
Followed by Dennis saying, I guess you get that a lot now, but I do have to say it. # Kat was right.
Kat loves when she's validated as right.
Am I trending?
Cannot wait to hear the next episode. Those were the only two tweets for that # that I could find.
Dan, that's unkind.
I'm
but
just
accurate.
Saying, I checked.
Yes.
I did check.
Okay.
Listener ATN.
For now, Kat. For now. Listener ATN.
Listener ATN wrote, in case no one has sent you to this, I thought it was worth sharing, and he sent a link to an interview with Adrian Arjona in Elle, talking about Bix and that final scene, which I read, which is a good interview.
It was nice.
We'll darken your inbox with a mail on Andor S2 before recording, but looking forward to hearing your wrap-up. David wrote back, also Ray, episode 10, all hail Lonnie, true hero of the rebellion. Mm-hmm. There's a direct chain of events leading to the destruction of the Death Star, and all starts with him on that bench.
Yes, agree. Like, Lonnie is a real hero, and I don't think, like, we might remember Luthen, but no one's ever gonna remember Lonnie, and that's sad. Especially when they give him a family right before he dies. That was brutal.
Yeah.
Peter just linked to, I think, the bit where Kat predicts that Bix is pregnant with just a hand clap and a cat emoji.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
I would like to credit, but it's also like...
In retrospect, it's one of those really things that makes perfect sense, but...
No, I mean, but you called
you
it perfectly.
You got it. You figured it out, though.
Mainly, I'm just proud of you because there's all those other times where you get it wrong and then you argue about what you said. So this really evens that out.
But there's also... when I take this back to Stormlight...
Like, if you said this exactly right, like, it's not like there's a, like, well, you know...
No, but...
You called it.
But it's such a common trope. So, like, let me bring this back to Stormlight 5, A Knights of Wind and Truth.
As you're wont to do. Dan and I love that book.
Love that book. But spoilers. Spoilers for the folks if you haven't gotten to the end of like 17,000 pages.
I haven't got to the end of the book, first book.
You haven't even started the first book.
Correct.
It is really good. But anyways, there's like a main character.
Dan's not really into books.
A woman. And she at one point just puts a hand on her stomach. It does something that's like, oh, she's pregnant. And I remember seeing on the like all the forums afterwards being like, wait, how do you know she's pregnant? And everyone being like, it's really obvious because there's like some very telltale signs that people always use when they're doing storytelling.
Bix does that in that episode. There is a moment where she is standing around talking to Cassian on Yavin. I swear to God, I think she does put the hand
on
the stomach.
I think in the L article even says like Bix knows she's pregnant when she leaves. It's part of the, and Tony agreed with her.
Not that Tony. Tony Gilroy.
Tony Gilroy. Mean,
the Tonys.
I also agree.
it's like anytime you see a character not drinking throw up. On a TV show.
Yeah.
Anyway, Aaron writes, I take umbrage with some people getting upset about Bix leaving. Bix is alive and leaving makes sense to the story, and I have a sneaking suspicion the show will come back around to her. That was how I felt before watching the final three episodes. Called it, she's safe and could easily return somewhere else, and as a fairly new father, the final scene on Harvest made me weep. Rogue One hurts in a brand new way now.
Yeah.
Maybe showing Bix with a child was just to illustrate that even the darkest fates still have a glimmer of hope. But I want to believe they can make another show about someone else, somewhere else that can feature her and Junior. We have so many shows during the before the Battle of Yavin, so many shows after Return of the Jedi. What we need now are shows that take place during the original trilogy. What do you think? May the Force be with you.
Totally agree.
Covered, but agree.
Totally agree. And I agree. I also was bawling during that scene. Absolutely bawling.
How
so
about
beautiful.
A show on, wait for it, Tatooine? and it's the guy who has to book bands for Jabba's Palace. And he's so stressed. There's a lot of scenes of him having to like run down hallways and like taking phone calls, and he's just real, a lot of walking and talking. He's just real stressed.
All I have is figured Dan in the modal notes.
Yeah,
it's my one client.
There's a lot of it's M-rated. There's a lot of swearing. So
David writes, I've said it before and I'll say it again, the way forward now is just to remake A New Hope with the improved elements and tone from Andor. Replace those cheesy elements like the cantina scene with a Chandrillan style rave complete with DJ interrogation droid. Maybe Bix is living with Obi-Wan and raising baby Cassian. Maybe R2 works for Luthen, and that medal ceremony, a propaganda piece broadcast across the galaxy to win more support for the cause. No medal for Chewie because DEI doesn't play well. Obviously Empire Strikes Back would be reviewed shot for shot, and as for Return of the Jedi, I guess just add more Mandalorians and add Ferrix to the celebration montage at the end. Thanks as always for your reactions, observations, and insights. Sagrona, David.
Sagrona Tima.
Sagrona Tima.
Joe writes, hi Dan, Tony, and Kat. I continue to be thrilled when a new episode of ACP appears in Overcast. One, firstly, congrats to Dan on his Jeopardy success. I've not been able to watch it as yet here in Australia, but I'm still working on various means and ways. Thank you. At the risk of showing my age, I'm a big fan of Golden Era sci-fi. Highline was not the first author to use the word astrogation. I've read stories and pulps from the 1930s and 1940s that use the word. I believe the earliest mention is in The Conquest of Space, 1931, by David Lasser.
Okay, so our current 1931, David Lasser. Can anyone beat
1931?
Please, if you have a picture, cite your sources, please.
He did send me a link.
Good, okay.
To the SF Dictionary. Have you all had a chance to watch season 2 of Light and Magic yet? A couple of podcast episodes ago, Tony wondered if the documentary would address the negative reaction to Phantom Menace. Oh, yes, they did. Yes. The second episode features a segment with the actor who did motion capture and the voice of Jar Jar Binks. He discusses at length his near-successful suicide attempt following the response to the movie. Did the producers of this show include this possibly triggering interview as a big FU to all the overblown criticism? As new Star Wars content is thin on the ground, perhaps you could devote an episode of ACP to season 2 of Light and Magic. In addition, will you be discussing Tales of the Underworld? I don't watch the animated shows myself, but I'm content to live vicariously through you. Many thanks for the great moonlighting episode. Regards, Joe.
Dan will now give you a definitive schedule of all of our upcoming activities.
We had plans.
We had planned to do the Tales of the Underworld.
We're working on stuff. Yeah,
it's coming. Yes. Scheduling proved a little more challenging than we'd hoped. Light Magic's a good idea. I'd like to watch
the fourth partner in
two.
Our podcast is very difficult to
and
work
refuse
with.
To sleep the night we're going to do with the podcast.
Yep.
But yes, those things are on the table. We have many things. I have to write down all the things that has been suggested for us to do. Listener Will writes back. You might remember a listener Will wrote in with questions about watching the movies with small children.
Oh, yes.
Will writes back with the subject line, Moana is scary? Good day. Thanks for letting me know how y'all watch it. I celebrate how your three-year-old enjoyed the hilarity of Tafiti, but our five-year-old was terrified of her. Great comparison for our situation. The day after we watched part of A New Hope, our kiddo asked if she could be Leia for Halloween. Have y'all had any family costumes of your fave sci-fi IPs? We have, actually. We have all dressed up in Starfleet uniforms.
Yeah, I was not invited. I was
sorry.
Do you want to join us actually in the future?
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
No, you have your own uniform.
Is there right? Like, what's the, is there, Is there like an animal in Star Trek that would be that? Some
no,
kind
we
of
need
comic?
A, we need a medical officer because we've got two. Oh, okay. We got two reds. No, we got a red and a yellow.
Yeah,
we need
I'm
a
command.
We need a medical officer. It,
I could be that dog that has horns. For
no,
some
you could be the doctor from Lower Decks.
You've been Neelix.
Very
you
elaborate bird, an
Tuvix?
Elaborate bird costume with then the tweed jacket over it. It's a very
Dr.
impractical.
Yes, you can be Dr. Miglimo. That's right.
It's a very impractical costume. Yeah. So warm, so many layers.
It depends that's, on some Halloween it's good, yeah. Some Halloween it's bad. No, so Dan and I, a couple years, invested in actually fairly high quality Star Trek uniforms, which are great, and we just wear those. I mean, they're more
you
than Amazon.
What era they're from? That's an important.
So
detail.
I'm Strange New Worlds.
Mine's also a Strange New Worlds era.
And they're like probably like 60-70 bucks. And it's great. We wear them every Halloween now. We're always matching. We always have Halloween costumes. I wear them with a pair of like leggings and everything's great.
Dan wears his around the office sometimes too.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's just our son then refuses to wear costumes. It's really exciting. Anyways, it's a story for another time. Wait, Tony, do you have a
sci-fi IP outfit? Halloween costume?
I don't. I'm not prepared. Sorry.
All right. Well, there's still time.
Do you want one? We should get you one for like running. Maybe when we do the Christmas 5K this year, we could do like this.
All of us in full Mandalorian armor. Clank, 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 clank.
The spurs
the
that really
is,
do
the
it.
The key is to really to get it made out of metal so you really feel the weight of it. It
helps you lose more. Yeah, it's like it really, it's going to up your cardio.
Especially when you're wearing a mask.
Joel writes in with a somewhat surprising subject line. Buffy. Hi, what? ACP crew. I wonder if you have a comment, because we're apparently...
We've issued a statement.
I wonder if you have a comment on the fact that Ryan Kira Armstrong, Fern, and Skeleton Crew has just been cast as the new chosen one in the Buffy reboot. Personally, I thought she was the best thing about Skeleton Crew, so I think it's an absolutely inspired choice. Thoughts? I saw this yesterday as we record. She was great in Skeleton Crew.
Yeah.
Wait, is she playing Sarah Michelle Gellar?
No, Sarah Michelle Gellar is in it.
Is in it.
She is the new Slayer, basically, or next generation Slayer.
How old is Fern?
She's like 14 or 15. She's about the age that Sarah Michelle Gellar was supposed to be, that Buffy was supposed to be.
It's confusing because Sarah Michelle Gellar was not actually a high school student.
She was in her, I think she was not that far off. She was not the oldest person on the cast by far.
No. Dan. The librarian.
Anthony Stewart was clearly the oldest person. But he was playing someone so much younger. No.
I know. No. You know, I have not actually seen it. I've seen a lot of Buffy, but not all of it. So I don't have strong feelings about it. I know other nerds do.
Who's the new Angel?
I don't think it's not a reboot.
It's
a continuation.
It's a continuation. Yeah.
Also, David Boreanaz is still doing TV.
He can
so
still
he'll
do
probably
it.
Pop up at some
have
point.
Have you seen him? He could do it any day. He's ready.
He's much more like... beefy than he was at that. Like but you go back and look at him on like, Angel and Buffy, and he's like a skinny little kid.
Yeah, he is. I get nervous when I see him on TV shows where he's in the daylight. It's like, no,
they shoot his scenes
Angel.
At night. It's all day for night. I think this is great. I think she's a great actress. It does make me think that probably a season two of Skeleton Crew isn't happening anytime soon because that is a far bigger.
Unless it totally crashes and burns.
It could, which it could. Could totally happen. Harley writes, after finishing Andor, I had to roll into Rogue One, and then that led to A New Hope. Here is my question. Do you think the Andor TV series Rogue One and A New Hope is the Rebel trilogy that just happens to overlap the Skywalker trilogy? I kind of like it. I mean, I did think about it and was like, it is kind of a trilogy.
Which
but
one?
It's
Rebel?
Andor.
Yeah.
Rogue One. A New Hope.
Yes. Oh, okay. I see
so A New Hope is now the end of a trilogy rather than be the beginning of a trilogy because it ends with the death. Like, it is a very satisfying ending, right? Yeah. Except for the fact that none of our characters from the first two parts appear at all. You'll have to. It's a good thing George isn't still around. Or he'd be going back, putting all those people in the background.
Draven waving in the background all over.
That's literally what one of the writers in was suggesting is like how you can basically remake A New Hope.
Yeah, which I think is possible. Jay writes in to say, Andor, wow, as I said last week, I'm sure there's little I can say about the show that you yourselves and my fellow listeners haven't already said. Those last three were so tense. It's crazy that we know to some extent how the plot must play out, and yet I was on the edge of my seat willing Andor and Mon Mothma to move quicker on the last episode for Andor to get Clea before the ISB. Such a fantastic show. I've enjoyed every minute both seasons. I'm currently watching Rogue One, and by comparison, its story moves so quickly, it's giving me whiplash. I have a couple points, though. I was fascinated by the design of the town square in Gorman. The architecture of the shop fronts around the square was quite strange to me, and I thought it was an odd choice for the show's set designers. But then I found the below picture this week, and it turns out they filmed that square at the Guildhall in London. Mm-hmm. I work in an office directly opposite the Guildhall. Most days in the summer, I eat my lunch in that very square looking at the shapes of the very building, and I didn't recognize it at all in the show.
They just... I did see a picture of this earlier on Instagram. Yeah, they added like a second, there's like the wavy bit on the bottom. They added a second wavy bit on the top. So they did some CGI on top of it.
Sure.
Yeah, I think that's what he's, in this picture.
What kind of pigeons do they have there? Did they have to bring those pigeons in?
Yes.
Yeah.
Also, pigeons. I have a theory about the little model spiders. I assume they are woven like crochet or something, maybe with sticks for the legs. It's an entire plant known for making clothes. So in my mind, these might be the kind of things that originally kids would make, but since then have been turned into tourist souvenir trinkets. Also, see the second image below that I saw online today. I had assumed it was Photoshopped, but it's there in episode 10. Lol, it reminded me of the robot chicken sketch when Vader throws Jar Jar out of the Star Destroyer airlock. Anyway, as always, thanks to you all for taking the time to each discuss this amazing show for us. I've enjoyed your podcast at least as much as I enjoyed watching Andor itself. The second image is a picture of Dedra in Luthen's shop with an arrow pointing at the fact there is a skull there, which I'm pretty sure is a Gungan.
Yeah.
The bit where I have to say that robot chicken one where Anakin throws Jar Jar out of the airlock is pretty great, and Jar Jar comes back as a force ghost and he's constantly haunted by him for the rest of his life, which is pretty funny. Finally, one last email from a longtime listener, first time writer, named, I'm gonna get this right, Guy.
Is it our friend Guy?
Hello, Star Wars pals. Longtime listener, first time writer. Thanks for putting on such a fun and endearing show. Kat's frustration with the handling of Bix's story in the penultimate arc is well founded. It clunked for me too. We suspected she'd need to be gone by Rogue One, and it could have been worse, but it felt driven by plot considerations rather than character. Until, of course, the final scene of the show, which does clarify her chapter her motivations. I think the intent of her leaving was meant to echo Casablanca. In a rare clumsy execution, the show fumbled it a bit. I believe that because of the singing the national anthem in defiance of fascists to share with Casablanca, and the particular ending, spoilers, of the movie matches the show. Ingrid Bergman's character leaves Bogart's Rick to be with Victor Laszlo. She gives up love to support Laszlo in his important fight against fascism because she believes in him and the cause comes first. In the final scene, Bogart walks off with a local policeman saying, "This looks like the beginning of a beautiful friendship." I think the introduction of K2 shortly after she leaves is meant to lift the story beat. It didn't really work perfectly, obviously. So many incredible women characters in the show are given amazing things to do, arcs, and are powered by their own character motivations. It's a shame Bix didn't quite get her due, but ultimately it was her choice to leave, and she did it for the love of her child, her love of Cassian, her belief that he's special and has a calling, and her deep need to fight the Empire, as Marva would want. Thanks for the fun Star Wars talk. Your pal, Guy.
I like
last
that.
Last name withheld.
It's our pal Guy. Yeah.
I like the comparison to Casablanca, and I can see them trying to go for that and not making it, but that's a nice...
I had thought about with the singing, though, but that does really... Yeah. The Marseillaise in Casablanca, obviously, big scene there. So that is all the mail. I know, there was a lot, but we did it. Good job, everybody.
Good job, all of us, and you for
all
listening.
The people who sent the mail.
Thank you all.
Thank you, everybody. We are constantly gratified, I think, by the amount of mail that we get for the show, which just, I think, shows how passionate people are about Star Wars, which we love to talk about. So thank you, everybody who sent something in this season. We really appreciate it. And thank you to all our listeners and to our members. We really appreciate it, too. As we said, we've got some other stuff planned for the nearish future as we've wrapped Andor coverage. But we're thinking about other stuff to do too, because I know there is not a current Star Wars show scheduled anytime in the near future that we're aware of. So we'll be back at some point to talk about some other stuff, pick up some of the things that we haven't got a chance to talk about yet, maybe talk about some stuff that we haven't discussed that has been out there for a while. I mean, I know we've mentioned talking about Rogue One or something like that, so that might be an opportunity now that we finish Andor. Lots of great things that we could talk about.
We can go back and watch the original series.
The original series.
Star Trek.
Yeah. Got to get all the way to Chekhov's hospital is what I'm saying.
Just a wild pivot in scope for the podcast.
I think there's a point where every podcast should have to essentially move one topic to the right. We'll take over Vulcan Hello. Vulcan Hello will take over Biff. Biff will take over Vulcan Hello. It's just a cycle.
Yep. Makes sense.
All right. Well, let's wrap our coverage there. And I want to most of all thank my co-host, as always, Tony Sindelar. Thank you so much for going on this journey.
Thanks for having me. Goodbye, nerds.
And Kat Benish, always a pleasure to talk about Star Wars with you.
It has been a blast. Hashtag Kat was right. And Sigrona!
Sigrona team.
Thank you again, everybody out there, for listening and sending in your thoughts and just generally spreading the love of the show. We really appreciate it. We will be back again sometime soon. But until then, may the Force be with you.
And also with you.
Check out sauce. I'm now recording.
Excellent.
Yeah, start with a yawn.
Everybody yawn. How do we want to break it up this week? Because there's really only
by episode.
I think that's right. Yeah.
Let's do it that way.
It's basically, it's because it's Star Trek 4. It's basically Star Trek 4.
Are you sure you mean 4?
There are no whales.
No, but they have to break Chekhov out of the hospital.
I think it's a very minor part. Most people don't think Star Trek 4, the one where they had to break Chekhov out of the hospital.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I think that's not the thing that comes to mind for most people first.
But the scene in the hospital is a great scene.
Oh, I understand it's a great scene, but it's about 30 seconds of the movie.
No.
It's longer than that.
It's longer than that.
There's a chase scene and stuff. But the whales really pull a lot of is the problem. Yeah, Chekhov.
I would
Chekhov
argue
is,
that
people
on
forget
the
that Chekhov
the
is in the show like half the time. So
what?
Well, there's the whole thing. He's not in the first episode of TOS. He's not in the first season of TOS. He's not in.
He's a late
the animated series. They cut him. They had to cut a character, and that was the first character they cut.
Always rush
off.
Well, no, but I feel like Chekhov represents so much about you.
Yeah, there's the famous thing where
he represents the monkeys. You know that, right?
He represents the monkeys?
Yeah, because they cast him because he looked like the monkeys.
Oh, that makes sense. But, like, I think it represents a lot of, like, I think I've always thought very highly of Gene Roddenberry.
That's a mistake.
Gene Kuperi. No, because of his willingness to have the Russians there and to show, like, that the Russians could be good people, too.
Koenig, not Russian, just to be clear.
Not nearly as bad as, like, Johnny Five is alive, yeah.
Yeah, Dan, I have bad
Johnny
news for
Five
you
is
about
a prop. Yeah. I assume Leonard, you're talking about Fisher Stevens playing an Indian person and not the fact that the robot is not real.
Dan, just so you know, Leonard Nimoy, not a Vulcan.
The Incomparable Podcast Network. Become a member and support this show today. TheIncomparable.com/members.